Let's do this. Woo! Ring the bell. This is Between the Ropes.
Oh, you're going for the dirt, for the behind-the-scenes stuff.
It's time to get Between the Ropes. Between the Ropes.
Hey, everybody. Brian Fritz here on the Between the Ropes podcast. Thanks for tuning in, listening, subscribing to the podcast on iTunes and on Stitcher. Had to bring this guy in. Had to talk to him in a little while. My buddy Kevin Eck, who, when he's not watching Grease 2 on a loop, he is the manager for your tag team champions of Maryland Championship Wrestling, who will be putting their belts on the line this coming Saturday night when they face the Appalachian Outlaws. And that show is coming up, like I said, Saturday night, anniversary 2016 at the MCW Arena in Joppa, Maryland. Kevin Eck joined me on the podcast. Was that a good enough plug since I forgot last time?
That's a step in the right direction, but, you know, I hate to correct you, but it's actually extreme anniversary.
It always says anniversary 2016 on the site.
Oh. I'm pretty sure it's extreme anniversary.
It does on the poster.
On your part.
I was looking at what was typed out on the poster. It does say Extreme Anniversary 2016 because Matt and Jeff Hardy are going to be there. So
that is correct. Matt Hardy will be in action, and Jeff Hardy will be in his corner. All that stuff you've seen on TV about the brothers not getting along, that don't believe that, because Matt will be there and Jeff will be in his corner, and you know. MCW is what's really going on. That stuff in TNA, I don't know what that's all about.
Will Matt be looking for revenge on you, considering you cost him his championship?
Well, you know, I've addressed this. I think Matt kind of deserved it. You know, Matt's a big phony. Matt, you know, tries to be everybody's, you know, tries to make the fans believe he's a good guy, and behind the scenes, he's really not. So I had to, had to deliver a little low blow and cost him the championship. If the fans knew the real Matt Hardy, they'd think. But to see that now, they're seeing, I think, the real Matt. If you follow his Twitter, he's mean to everybody.
He's tearing it up right now.
Yeah, he is.
A piece of advice, though. I would wear a cup, probably a steel cup, while you go to that show.
Well, I surround myself with, the best athletes and toughest guys. So it's not only the entourage, Eric Chappell and Dirty Money, the MCW Tag Team Champions. And by the way, they don't have belts. Belts hold your pants up. They have championships.
Oh, so, I'm sorry. I don't know the official lingo of somebody like you.
Also acceptable. They also have another tag team, the Guns for Hire, who are exactly what they say. And they're my insurance policy. Just nice. To make, you know, every good businessman knows you have to have an insurance policy and to protect your assets. And that's what the Guns for Hire are. So we're going to be MCW Tag Team Champions for a long, long, long time.
I expect that because I'm still waiting for my shirt.
You know, you got to pay for it?
I thought we had a deal.
It's not a charity. This is not a charity now.
By the way, you point out the thing about the belts. And I know that that's a dirty word at a certain company you used to work for. But I believe I heard Stephanie McMahon use that terminology on Raw not too long ago.
Well, if she did, she must have used the word championship in front of it, because championship belt is acceptable. But still, the preferred term is either championship or titles. But if you must say belt, you can say championship belt.
Okay.
But you can never just say belt alone. And you definitely don't want to say strap.
Oh,
you will get the strap if you say that. Literally.
This is why I like to have you on, because you are very informative. You know, you're setting us all straight. You know, and telling us the correct things to do things.
Yes, I like to educate you and your audience.
You're like a modern day Dean Douglas out here.
Okay, I'll take that.
Sure. Dean Douglas, Matt Stryker, Lanny Poffo a little bit, you know, all of that combined, right?
By the way, Lanny Poffo also got a shot in the nuts from me, just like Matt Hardy. just throw that out there.
You're just making your way around the wrestling business, low-blowing people?
I am.
Look out, the entourage could be near. Cover your junk.
Well, you know, I'm not an athlete. I'm not an athlete, but I am an athletic supporter, to quote a great line from Grease.
You're going to be like that guy on with the videos where he just randomly Rochambeaus people on the street.
You got to do what you got to do, Brian.
Apparently, man. I didn't know times were that tough for money, Kevin. I mean, is everything going to be okay? No wonder you want me to buy that shirt so damn bad. Oh, that's good. That's good. Let's talk about the news of the week of Daniel Bryan, having to retire. It was something that I think it shocked a lot of people, but at the same time, it was something that we saw coming. And you have a different bit of an insight from the standpoint that you obviously worked on the creative team of WWE for a while, and you got to work with Daniel during the 3 years that you were there. What was it from your perspective of getting to work with Daniel? What was that experience like?
It was a fantastic experience. I mean, I don't know. I've never heard anyone say a bad word about Daniel Bryan. And, you know, I know that you've worked with him, you know him. You're just not going to find a more genuine, sincere guy, not only humble, you know, not only in the wrestling business, but just in life. And was always a pleasure to work with. It's funny because my first experience with him was pitching an idea to him when he was, this is not long after I first got to WWE in 2011. He was the Money in the Bank title briefcase holder, but really wasn't doing anything, if you recall. He couldn't even get on TV. If he was on TV, he was putting somebody over, and he really couldn't even get on TV. And when I got there, there was a real conundrum of, you know, what do we do with this briefcase, and how do we get it off him? I think there was some real buyer's remorse of why did they ever put it on him in the first place. So I was, you know, obviously I recognized how talented Daniel Bryan was. And a lot of people certainly who were familiar with his work as Bryan Danielson knew how good he could be if just given the opportunity. So I made it one of my missions was to try and, like, let's get Daniel Bryan on TV. Like, there's no reason why this guy should be sitting backstage every Monday and Tuesday and not doing it, carrying that briefcase around but never doing anything. And I also thought that AJ Lee, who was just AJ back then, who really hadn't done anything other than NXT back when it was a competition show, I really thought she had kind of this Molly Holly, Miss Elizabeth, almost kind of wholesome quality. And so my idea was to put Daniel Bryan and AJ together, almost like a Spike Dudley, Molly Holly kind of couple, and that it would really help them both. And ultimately, my big pitch was that Daniel would, you know, cash in the Money in the Bank, and he'd win the title, and it would all go to his head, and he and AJ would then have problems, and, you know, it would really get him over as a heel to be mean to AJ. Which, as you know, a lot of that eventually did happen, not quite in the way I laid it out, but when I pitched that, Brian Gewirtz, who was the head of creative at that time, I laid out the whole storyline for him. And the only thing I think he really heard was Molly Holly, Spike Dudley, the modern day version could be Daniel Bryan and AJ. And he's like, that's something we should pursue. So I went to TV not long after that, and I pulled Daniel and AJ, pulled them both aside and said, hey, here's what we're thinking about, you know, on the creative team. And I laid it all out. And AJ was like, you know, because AJ wasn't doing anything at that point. She was just right off of NXT. So she was very eager. She's like, oh, I love it. I love it. That's great. Daniel looked me straight in the eye and kind of had that little smirk on his face, that little smile that he has. And he goes, I'm going to be honest. He's like, AJ, nothing against you. I hate it. He goes, I just hate it. He goes, you know, the last time they did something with me and a girl, it was Gail Kim. And I thought it was going to go a certain way, and it never did. And I was worse off for it. He's like, I'm like, well, Daniel, what's your idea? And his idea, which he pitched over and over, he's, I want to work with William Regal. Let's just do an angle with me and Regal. You know, we go in there and we have a great match. And I remember going back to Brian Gewirtz and saying, you know, Daniel's not really feeling this whole AJ thing. He wants to work with William Regal. And, well, William Regal, as great as we all know he is in the ring and his personality, stuff like that, Vince finds him to be incredibly bland and boring. And like the worst, one of the worst things you could ever pitch is doing something with William Regal. So we just proceeded anyway, you know, we're going to go down this path with AJ and Daniel. And he wasn't refusing to do it. He was just giving his opinion. He's like, well, if you're asking my opinion, I don't really like it. But he was going to do whatever we asked him to do. And obviously, once we started, he embraced it. And, you know, really that was the beginning of Daniel Bryan taking off.
And that was the thing that I always found interesting about him, is that there would be plenty of things where you would think, you know, how is this going to work with Daniel, you know, or just, you know, from the outside looking in, you would just hear like the generality of an idea and going, you know what, I don't know if that's going to work with anybody, much less with him. But he would find a way to make a lot of different things work that you wouldn't necessarily think would, like when he worked with the Bellas, you know, when he worked with AJ, when he did the stuff with Kane. The stuff with Kane, I mean, on the surface, you would think this is stupid, you know, to some extent. And then once you started doing it and you saw the interaction between the two and where it's going, it was great chemistry between the two of them and even the doctor there. And the whole thing worked out tremendously well.
Oh, it really did. And you're right. If you look at that on paper, you know, you're going to put Daniel Bryan and Kane together and they're going to be hugging in the ring. And I think you would think, oh, my God, it's a horrible idea. But it's really a testament to both those guys, Glenn and Daniel, just how good of performers they are and how willing they are to make whatever they are given work. And they did. They had great chemistry. They were both fully committed to it. And, again, obviously a huge part in what got Daniel Bryan over. Now, let's on the other side of it, let's be honest. Kane is a guy who's been around for a lot of years. I think he came around in 97 or 98. Constantly, you know, when you've been around that long, it's not like the old territory days where you come in for 6 months and leave, and then you come back a year later and you can move all around to stay fresh. It's tough to stay relevant or interesting, I should say, over that length of time. So he had to constantly go through different incarnations. And I think that one of them, when we look back at Kane's career, I think that will be one of the highlights, is the time that he was with Daniel Bryan and Team Hell No. And it really was kind of a rebirth of the Kane character and, you know, made him a guy who fans might say, oh, God, you know, it's a little bit of the Big Show thing. It's like, Big Show and Kane, I've seen these guys forever. But I think at that point, you really look, one of the highlights every week was seeing Daniel Bryan and Kane do their thing. And it was just amazing. It was fun to be a part of and just sit back and watch those guys take it and run with it, have fun with it.
Yeah, that was incredible to see how that all worked out and just how everybody kind of bought into it at some point, you know, and you saw the amount of fun that they had with it once they got into it. You talked about, you know, pitching the idea, you know, for AJ but and with Daniel Bryan. And it's funny because I think there is a mentality from a lot of different people, you know, that are just average fans and wondering, like, why did it take so long for Daniel to get anything? Why did it take so long for him to be in a main event picture or for him to even be featured? Because like you said, you know, there was a time where even, you know, he was the Money in the Bank winner, but there was a lot of questions about, you know, what was going to come next and how exactly to use him. But were there being ideas pitched on a regular basis? And it was just kind of one of these, we're not exactly sure what direction to go with him, or how did that all work out?
Well, again, I got there in the summer of 2011 and, you know, that, so I wasn't there right before that when he got the money. I don't know what the decision was to put the Money in the Bank on him in the first place. From what I've heard, and this is just, you know, secondhand, it was that Wade Barrett was the guy who was originally supposed to get it that year, and they made the change at the last minute to do something different that would surprise people. So I don't think anybody going into that match thought Daniel Bryan was going to win it. And it's like, okay, well, you know, it reminded me of the Damian Sandow thing, which I was there for.
Right.
Like, all right, we're going to pull the trigger on Damian Sandow. And then they gave it to him. And they're like, man, I don't know. Is this guy really world championship material? And I think there was a lot of that going on with Daniel when I arrived. And I didn't hear a ton of ideas being thrown around, you know, for him. And that's one of the, you know, that's why I took it upon myself to, all right, you know, I'm one of the new guys here. Like, how can I make an impact? And, you know, to me, there's Daniel Bryan sitting right there, who, you know, just has all this talent and isn't doing anything. And, you know, I have to say, in my wildest dreams, I thought he could be a world champion. You know, he had that Money in the Bank contract, and I thought there was a storyline there, and I thought AJ would help and all that. I thought he could get elevated. But never in a million years did I ever think he would become the phenomenon that he did. And again, I'll be honest, I saw him as a heel. I saw him as a guy who, if you made him a heel and maybe you even gave him a, you know, a heater, you know, a bodyguard type or whatever, that he could really get over in that sense. I never thought he was top babyface material, I have to admit. And obviously, I don't think I was alone in that thinking. but he certainly proved everyone wrong. And when he got that chance, you know, to run, to get the ball, once again, he ran with it and scored a touchdown. When we made the decision to turn him babyface, I actually said, I think we should keep him heel. Because, you know, the yes chants were starting and people were starting to get with it. And I was just like, well, it's good that he's getting over, but I think he could get be an even bigger heel if he continues to turn on the crowd. And but no, you know, the decision was made. Like, let's go with this. There's something happening here. And
you were there.
Give him a shot.
You were there for WrestleMania 28, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what was your reaction, you know, and everybody else's win? So he loses in the opening match to Sheamus in 18 seconds. And then we saw the crowd reaction the rest of that night where people were chanting yes throughout Mania. And then the next night on Raw in Miami, people just went nuts for the guy.
Yeah, and I think that really shocked a lot of people in the company. Yeah, see, what I thought of it, I hated it. And you know, I wasn't alone. I had some of my colleagues there. We just, you know, it was bad, and we knew it was going to be bad. And I know Daniel and Shane, I don't know if they ever talked about it publicly, but I know Daniel and Sheamus were both really disappointed because they wanted to go out there and have a great match. I mean, as you know, that's what Daniel's all about, is having the great match. And, you know, it was Vince's idea, totally his idea, that, you know, we're going to go out, we're going to do this. The whole setup was Vince's plan, that, you know, he's going to kiss AJ, get distracted, boom. And that was going to, you know, that would get them, both guys, more over than if they went out and worked a great match. The plan all along was for Sheamus to win. Now, me, my thinking, and some of my colleagues was, no, that's 100% wrong. The way to get him over is you do this great match, you know. But I have to say, looking back, people still talk about that 18-second match. People remember it. And I think Vince was right on that one. I don't think we thought so at the time. I remember standing next to one of my coworkers as Daniel Bryan was coming down. We were actually out in the bowl as you know, he was coming down, and the whole stadium's doing the yes chant, and Daniel's supposed to be a heel. We're like, oh my God, this is going to be horrible. And it's going to be horrible for Sheamus. But everything turned out great.
You did.
Sometimes the old man knows what he's doing.
He does, you know, and that's the thing too, that I know people will say, well, he was reluctant. And I think there was other people, you know, creatively, and you'd obviously know this because you were there, but there was other people obviously in the creative team and, you know, people that worked directly with the creative team and with Vince that were, you know, proponents of his. And I think, and tell me if I'm wrong about this, I think Vince McMahon loves the person Daniel Bryan and appreciates everything that he's done, you know, not only as a person, but as a performer. It's just a question of, do I really see you as my top guy? It got to a point where it wasn't even just my top babyface necessarily. It was, are you my top guy? And he was just reluctant about that because it was something different than what he has traditionally used in that position. And I can understand that.
Well, you hit the nail right on the head with that. And Vince really did become a huge fan of Daniel Bryan's. You know, I observed that. Daniel went from a guy who, like I said, they were trying to figure out, well, why in the world did we ever give him this briefcase? How are we going to get it off him? To, okay, and it was a whole domino event of events of, you know, Mark Henry getting hurt when he was the world heavyweight champion really led to Daniel cashing in that contract and everything took off from there. Had Mark Henry not got hurt, I'm not really sure what Daniel Bryan's future would have been. As far, whether he has cashed in and been unsuccessful, I don't know. But once Daniel started taking off, Vince really came to appreciate him. He always knew he was a quote-unquote hell of a hand. He always knew that. But I think he was really surprised at how good Daniel was on the mic, how much he embraced his character and how believable he was in it, and how the people just took to him. And he, you know, Daniel Bryan, I think for a time, was Vince's favorite character on the whole show. And he really enjoyed coming up with ideas and you know, taking that character to wherever it could go. I agree with you that I don't think, and again, I actually do know this, because Vince pretty much came out and told us that he didn't think Daniel Bryan was ever going to be the number one guy in the company. And he had it wasn't just Vince's preconceived notion of what a superstar should look like or what a top guy should look like. I think that was a part of it. But if Daniel would have really, in a huge way, moved the needle, and the honest truth is he didn't.
Right.
It wasn't like he was having his segments were like incredibly highly rated, Cena was still doing better as far as merch. House shows where Daniel Bryan would be a headliner versus house shows where Cena was a headliner. Cena shows were still doing better. And I think all that kind of fed into Vince's preconceived notion of, well, I really like this guy, and he's really going to have a top spot, but I've got this proof here that pretty much backs up what I initially thought anyway, which is that he can't, he's going to be a, this is actually what Vince called him, a Chief J. Strongbow type character.
Oh, whoa.
You know who, you remember Chief. If back in the day, I know you're a little young, Brian, but I'm old enough I remember this. Back in the day when Bruno Sammartino was champion, Chief J. Strongbow was the number two babyface. And a lot of times you had to go through Chief J. to get to Bruno. So it was a really great spot for Chief J. Very high on the card, number two, but not number one, and was never going to be number one. And Vince saw Daniel as a Chief J. Strongbow. And he didn't think he would ever be anything more than that. And, you know, and that was before WrestleMania 30. And circumstances, again, changed. A lot of different things happened. A lot of things fell into place with, you know, Batista winning the Royal Rumble and Randy Orton, Batista at one point at WrestleMania main event. CM Punk leaving the – a lot of things happened. And Vince had no choice, really, but to put Daniel in that spot. But, again, it wasn't meant – it was never meant as a long-term, Daniel Bryan's going to be my guy and he's going to be on top for a long time. It was, all right, we got to do this. But at some point, Brock Lesnar's getting that title and Roman Reigns is taking it from Brock. And that was always the thinking.
Yeah, because I think, you know, the belief that I got from it was, okay, so obviously he started feuding with Kane after Mania. And then it would build up to Daniel against Lesnar at SummerSlam. And then Lesnar would hold on to the title until, you know, Mania the following year. And he would lose to Roman. But instead, you know, Daniel got injured and Lesnar did win the championship on that show. It was just against John Cena instead.
It was against Cena, right. And again, when all that went down, and this is Vince's old school, you know, promoter's mentality again. And nothing against Daniel personally, but when things worked out the way they did and we ended up with John Cena versus Brock at SummerSlam instead of Brock versus Daniel Bryan, Vince was convinced that Brock versus John Cena was a bigger attraction and was going to sell more pay-per-views and make more money. I don't know. Obviously, we don't know because we can't compare it because, you know, only one of those things happened. We never got to see Brock against Daniel. But that was his thinking at the time. And, you know, I remember one year, it runs together a little bit, but there was a SummerSlam where it was Daniel Bryan against John Cena. And
2013.
CM Punk against Brock Lesnar. Okay, very good. Brock Lesnar. And that underachieved. That did not hit the numbers that they thought that they were going to hit.
Right.
And Vince's thinking at the time was, you know, Daniel Bryan on top, people didn't really believe it, and he really didn't believe that anyone bought CM Punk as a legitimate opponent for Brock. And the other thing was Daniel and Cena were both babyfaces. And Vince was like, God, if I ever do a big babyface versus babyface like match like that again, just, you know, slap me or something. So he's like, nobody wants to see those two big babyfaces fight. Nobody believed Punk had a shot against Brock. So again, all that was playing into his mind as things played out, you know, after that.
Right. And that probably came, you know, and affected, you know, any kind of possible future match between Daniel and Brock, because that was a match that Daniel was public about that he really wanted. He had told me that in interviews and said it to other people. And it was something that I think some fans wanted, but it was something that I never really thought we were going to get unless there was other certain circumstances to make it happen.
Well, especially after the Punk thing happened, again, I think Vince really looked at it and said that just no one will look at Daniel Bryan standing next to Brock Lesnar and think he has any chance in the world. And it's going to look, it was almost like he never used this term, but almost would it like expose the business if a little guy like Daniel was to go in there against a killer like Brock Lesnar and last more than 2 minutes, that no one will, that it'll just shatter everyone's illusion of, like, we're throwing into people's faces that it's a work. Because I think that's what he thought with the Punk match, that, you know, Vince always used the term visceral from a visceral standpoint. You know, no one, it's just not believable. You know, the other thing with Daniel that I wanted to bring up was because he was such a big underdog, there was a feeling, and it wasn't just Vince, it was other people in high up positions, it felt like it's all the thrill of the chase with Daniel, that the people are really behind him and really want him to win the title and be this big success. But that once he gets there, now he's on top and he'll lose some of the luster of being the underdog. I never saw it that way, because growing up in the 70s and early 80s, we had an underdog champion in the WWF, and it was Bob Backlund. Bob Backlund was always portrayed as the underdog, because he's always facing these big monster heels. And it was, my God, how is the 230-pound technical wrestler going to beat these big dudes, you know? And so he always entered. It wasn't like the old days where with Bruno, or later with Hogan, where they were the overwhelming favorites. It was like, man, I can't wait to see these heels get their comeuppance, because Bruno and Hulk are going to kick their ass. It was, my God, how is Bruno, how is Bob Backlund going to beat these guys? And it was successful for nearly 6 years. I think you could have booked Daniel Bryan that exact same way, with the underdog constantly facing tougher, bigger challengers and having so much heart and determination and all that stuff, finding a way to constantly overcome. But like I said, there was a lot of people who thought that, you know, Daniel's just not going to be as popular once he's the champion, because the chase is over. It was all about the chase.
Right. Well, the interesting thing about that is that in today's day and age, today's culture, when it comes to, in today's wrestling fan, you would almost think like people get tired of a babyface that's kind of like that. But I don't think they would have gotten tired of Daniel, just because of the uniqueness of him and how genuine he was, or he is, you know, especially as a talent. You know, it's funny we talk about the underdog thing, because I do remember a smaller guy that was an underdog in Eddie Guerrero beating Brock Lesnar. And I always thought, you know, a Daniel Bryan Brock Lesnar match could work. I always thought, even before that, though, the match that I kind of wanted to see Brock against, if you really wanted to do a David versus Goliath match, and I'm not saying, you know, the David had to win, but I always thought Rey Mysterio against Brock Lesnar would have been a very interesting match, just building up like this ultimate underdog. And like, you could do it week after week, and that Lesnar's like, I'm going to squash you like a grape, beats him up maybe a couple times, and then maybe, you know, right before that pay-per-view, right before they have that match, Mysterio gets one over on Lesnar and just infuriates him. And now people are like, well, let's see what happens. You know, this could be curious now, you know, Rey, you know, challenging the giant, you know, for the championship. And like I said, I didn't think he would win it necessarily, but I thought I could have told an interesting story, and it could have been the same thing along the lines for Daniel. But like you said, you know, the ratings weren't there. The attendance numbers weren't necessarily there. And same with some of the merchandise numbers. It was always an interesting case with him, from a standpoint of, you want to give the fans what they want. You know, sometimes it takes a little bit longer to get to that point, but you've got paying customers that are coming to, you know, Raw on a week-to-week basis that are going crazy for Daniel, but there's not support in other areas, you know, so which way do you go? Especially if you just look at it from TV ratings. Do I want to support the people and give them what they want when they're actually paying to come to this show, or do I want to play more to the larger mass, which is my TV audience, which is not supporting him in droves, like these people are that come to the shows?
Well, again, there was a feeling from Vince that you see the huge reaction that Daniel gets in the arena. All right? So when you're watching Raw and you see 15,000 people all chanting yes and all that, that's one thing. That when you're in the arena and Daniel Bryan comes out, it's a big fun thing to participate in and do yes and all that. But that's not the same thing as wanting to buy a ticket to see someone. Again, yeah, that was a distinction. And I don't know whether Vince is right or wrong on this. I'm just saying that's sort of his thinking, is that,
like, if yes had caught on with anybody else, they would have done it, because it was just part of a fun experience to be there. It wasn't necessarily guy they're doing it for.
I think it was that it had something to do with Daniel, obviously, but that you might not open up your wallet and spend the money to take you and your family down to the wrestling show just to see Daniel Bryan, but you would do that to see John Cena. Right. I think that was the thinking, was you'll pay to go see John Cena. And if when you're there and Daniel Bryan comes out, you'll have a great time doing the yes chant, and you like Daniel Bryan too. But if John Cena's not on that card, you might not be spending that money to go to the show. That was the thought process. I think, I don't know whether that was really ultimately right or wrong. Personally, I was in favor of, after WrestleMania 30, let's just let Daniel run with it. Like, why do we immediately have to plot how many months he's going to hold the title and who's going to get it next and who's going to get it after that? And then Daniel's going to be slotted into this spot. Why not go with it? And maybe you will be proven, your hypothesis will be proven correct, that he's not as appealing now that he's the champion and not the underdog. But who knows? Maybe he would really rise to new heights. I mean, the guy was defying the odds all along anyway. What would it have hurt to just give him his run and see where it goes? After a couple months or three, however long you deem, you think that is appropriate, if you see it's not working, pull the plug and go with, your other plan.
Right.
It's not my company, and obviously there are millions and millions of dollars at stake, so a lot goes into those decisions, and I'm not qualified to make them. But that was just my opinion.
And the thing was, too, that while it made sense for him to feud with Kane following WrestleMania, considering what had been done prior to that, it was disappointing for a lot of people, just to say, well, here we go. He's going to feud with Kane. Do they really have a lot, invested in him when, the thinking was maybe you could do something else with Triple H, or you could do something with Orton, as a singles guy. And it just didn't happen like that. But it's funny the way that things turn out, because the way that they actually happened, he got this moment, at WrestleMania 30. And it's, arguably one of the greatest moments in WrestleMania history. It's one of the feel-good things that people look back on and remember that.
No question about it. And like we've talked about, it was one of those things that there was not anybody's grand plan for that to happen. As of, February, 2 months before WrestleMania, Randy Orton versus Batista for the WWE Championship really was, considered the main event. So
that would have been interesting if they had gone ahead with that and just said, I know that there's all this momentum behind them, but we have this plan and we are going to stick with this plan.
Well, yeah, you really at that point would find out how stubborn are some people and how much will they dig in their heels. Look, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I knew Batista versus Randy Orton, and nothing against either guy, but that's not a WrestleMania match at that stage. We've seen those guys wrestle each other so many times before. Yeah, they had a history and all that, but it's not fresh enough to be a WrestleMania match. And I felt that way even before the reaction that Batista got at the Royal Rumble. After that, obviously there was no way it was going to work, especially when both guys were pretty much heels. A heel versus heel match in the WrestleMania main event, there was just no way.
Yeah. Well, the good news is now, as upsetting as it is to know that Daniel's not going to be wrestling anymore, we have plenty of fond memories to look back on when it comes to him. Plus, he gets out at a time now where he's not putting, his health at risk anymore. And when you hear more about what exactly was going on, I think we all knew that he had a lot of concussions he had dealt with. And we haven't even really talked about the neck issues because, remember, this is a guy that had to have neck surgery. He lost feeling in his arm and went a while before he, got feeling back in his arm. And he was continuing to have to do rehab all the time and, a certain kind of muscle therapy so he could continue to have feeling with his arm, because even when he was getting the strength back, he would lose it from time to time, not all the way, but he would have, some issues to where he had to continue to do that. And that is scary enough. But then when you talk about the concussions and then you find out that, he has suffered seizures from the concussions, that, it's good that he, hangs it up now before he puts himself at further risk. That you look back, even 5 or 10 years ago, people would say, I'm forging ahead. No matter what people are telling me. I mean, obviously we didn't have the same kind of technology and the same kind of testing that, then as we do now, but there'd be plenty of people that said, damn it all, I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to continue. And we're now starting to see athletes in a lot of different sports and say, I've had my time, I want to continue, but it's just not worth it health wise. And I need to stop.
Yeah. I'm really glad, I know we've talked about this before, but I'm really glad that it worked out the way it did. I know Daniel had some doctors that initially were giving him the go ahead and clearing him. Now, even before we all just found out about the post-concussion seizures and the lesion in his brain. None of us even knew that. As he admitted, he hid that for a long time. But even not given that information, I just thought it just wasn't worth it for all the points you made. But the multiple concussions, the neck injury, everything else, I really didn't want to, as much as I enjoyed watching him, I didn't want to see him come back. And I don't know that I would have felt good about seeing Daniel Bryan in the ring again. It would have been uncomfortable, I think, knowing the risk he was putting himself at to get back in there. But I get it. I understand. He really loved, and I think he really made it clear in his retirement speech on Monday night that he just loves this business so much. You know, he's always wanted to do since he was a kid. He's been in the business since he was 18, and he's all about being a professional wrestler. It was his life. And it's hard to walk away from that, even in the face of people telling you that your health could be at serious risk. It can cloud your judgment. And I'm glad in the end that he got some more information and he listened to that information that basically told it. Same thing that Edge had to deal with a few years back, which is you literally can't do this anymore, or you may die. It may be catastrophic, and you need to think about that. And, you know, I'm glad Daniel ultimately made the right call.
Yeah, Edge's really came out of nowhere because obviously he had already had the one neck injury, but like he goes to WrestleMania. He was dealing with a couple of issues, but he goes to WrestleMania. He wins, beating Alberto Del Rio in the opening match in a match that we all thought he's going to drop the belt. And then the next day he has an MRI and they say, you know, he gets the call from Vince and says, I've got the results. You're done. I'm not letting you wrestle anymore. You're retired. Because just the wrong bump and you could be paralyzed for the rest of your life. So that was that, you know, and that's the way that it happens for athletes is that, you know, you can't go out on your own terms many times. I mean, your body will tell you when to go plenty of times. And that was the case here, you know, with Daniel and with Edge. Unfortunately, it's sudden and I'm sure it's tough to make a transition to go, you know, continue your life following, you know, a career that you've loved and something that you've always embraced. But, you know, I'm glad that so many different guys now will say, you know what, I'm going to listen to people and I'm going to get out while I'm ahead. And there is plenty of life going forward. I'll figure something else out and I can still be happy.
Yeah, again, to not be able to leave on your own terms at 34 years old when you still figure to have many more years in the business, I can only imagine how difficult, you know, that was for him. But, you know, there's life beyond wrestling. And I think he's in a good spot. You know, he's a happily married guy. He wants to start a family. He's financially secure. And I think as time goes on, you know, it'll get easier to let go of not being able to get back in the ring and hear the roar of the crowd. But I think everyone if you're a fan of Daniel Bryan or not, no matter how bad you wanted to see him come back and wrestle, I think you have to understand that that there really was no other decision for him at this point.
I'm curious to see, you know, I still think that at some point he's going to be involved in WWE. I just don't know if it's going to be immediate. I mean, I could see a scenario where he walks away, whether it's 6 months or a year or longer. Sooner or later, I think he will be involved in some way, or even if it's just for a short while, or will have his hand in wrestling somehow, somewhere. But I could see a scenario where when you have a tough break like this, you just say, I have to get away from it because I have to let it go. Because Austin did that and he stepped away for 3 years. You know, Edge has stepped away. He's made a couple of cameos, but for the most part, he stayed away. So I could see that. You know, I mean, if he still wants to be involved and they have something that will actually be cool and creative and works and he likes it, then I'm all for it. But I can't blame the guy if he says, hey, you know what? I love wrestling so much and it hurts me to know that I can't be in that ring that I've got to rip off the Band-Aid right now and take a break.
It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Cause I think that's a very valid point is can he be around it knowing that he can't go in that ring and do what he loves anymore? Or does he love the business so much that he has to be around it in some shape, form or fashion? And my gut, I don't know, but my gut tells me that he's going to stay involved in some way, whether there is a period where he walks away for a while and comes back. But he has so much to offer. I can't imagine whether it's working behind the scenes as a producer whether it's being a commentator on TV, whatever it is. He's such a beloved figure and has carved out such a spot for him in the hearts of the WWE fans that it would be a shame if he wasn't, you know, whether it was just it's being an ambassador, you know, showing up from time to time, whatever it is. But I think because he has such a good mind for the business and he was so accomplished in the ring, I think he would make a great teacher. And, you know, whether it's working with the kids at NXT or, well, like I said, backstage as a producer, I think he'd be a huge asset in either one of those roles.
Yeah, I think backstage as a producer, I think, would be fantastic. You know, just having another mind that's there that you can kind of, you know, pick his brain. I threw this one out there, too. I would be very interested in seeing him as a babyface GM for Raw because it's been so long since we've had the authoritative figure on that show be a babyface.
Yeah, I think that's another certainly another viable role for him. He would be great at it. You know, I guess there's a way to, you know, we've had the authority around for so long. I guess I'm sure there's some kind of storyline where we get the authority out of power and get Daniel in charge. But yeah, any whether it's an on camera role like that, whatever it is, yeah. I mean, Daniel Bryan's a huge asset, and I think WWE knows that, and I think he's going to have. He'll be with WWE in whatever capacity for as long as he wants to be. I'm sure there's an open invitation.
Wouldn't the easiest scenario be, say, Roman Reigns against Triple H, where Roman says, okay, obviously the championship is on the line, but let's put a little bit more in, you know, in the middle here. I'll retire, or you can fire me if I lose, but if I win, then the authority's out of power. And then the authority's out of power, and then we need a new GM, and here comes Daniel Bryan, and everybody's happy.
You could. I think they did that storyline once, and they brought him back. They brought the authority back.
We don't remember anything that happened more than 3 weeks ago, Kevin. Come on, people don't remember that.
There's a huge, huge, big Survivor Series angle. Sting came and made his debut, and the authority's out of power, and then they came right back.
Well, that only lasted for a week. That only lasted for a week.
They used Edge.
Yes, they did. They did use Edge. This would have a little bit more lasting power on it. Hopefully. By the way, so I got to bring this up. So there's so many different question marks about WrestleMania and what the card's going to be. And, you know, we're sitting here. We're only like 2 months away. And there's still a lot of things that maybe, you know, obviously I would think that Vince McMahon and other people in WWE know. But from the outside looking in, I could see 50 different scenarios of stuff. And then today was the investor call for Vince to discuss the fourth quarter financials. And somebody got in there and asked the question about, well, you've had this rash of injuries lately. And, you know, how is this all going to affect WrestleMania? What are you going to do for that show? And Vince's answer was, by being creative. And that was the whole answer.
That sounds like a Vince answer for sure.
That's pure Vince McMahon.
Well,
right,
you know, there's always conspiracy theories, and we always in wrestling, you always wonder, you know, are we getting the whole story, or is this a work or a shoot or whatever? Like, and I'm talking about John Cena. Like, and I've seen this with Cena before, where he's had an injury, and we're told, oh, the recovery time is 8 to 10 months or whatever it is, and then he comes back in 4 months. Like, that's happened.
Right.
And I wonder if, and I have no idea, no inside information, and I could be totally wrong here, but I wonder, is John Cena's recovery time for this injury not as long as we were led to believe, and it's going to be a nice surprise that John Cena will pop up next month or something, and you know, maybe we'll get that John Cena Undertaker match that was rumored to be happening.
I think that's
exactly. I have no idea.
I think that's going to happen. It might be wishful thinking, but we've seen Cena have these miraculous comebacks, like you said. And now he was out of surgery, what, a week or two? And he took a picture of his gym and he said, yep. Glad to be back in my life or something. And then he's now putting up, you know, he's not saying when he could be coming back, but now he's posting regularly where he's at in his recovery. And I think the reason why we haven't gotten a clear picture on who could possibly face The Undertaker and why we have a couple of guys like waiting in the wings, you know, kind of circling around, whether it be a Bray Wyatt or it be a Kevin Owens or whoever it might be, is because they don't know and they don't want to put anything in place because the hope is Cena is going to be back and we're still going to be able to do that match. And I'm at a point now where before I thought there was no way. And, you know, seeing these little videos now, Cena's going to make it. I think John's going to be there, and I think he's facing Taker at Mania.
Well, that's like we share the same conspiracy theory then, because, you know, I think about it, and like you said, there's a history here to go on. Like he's done it before, as far as coming back much sooner than expected. So I guess it shouldn't really be that much of a surprise if it happens. But and I'm seeing Cena's, you know, I follow him on Twitter as well, and he posted, I think it was today or yesterday again, like, you know, it's going to be a long, I'm making progress, but it's going to be a long time.
Yeah.
And I almost wonder, is that part of the work, you know, once
yes.
again, to reinforce to everybody that, oh my God, there's no chance we're going to ever see John until the summer, whenever it's going to be. And then all of a sudden here he is, you know, a month before WrestleMania.
No expectations, you know, just in case something goes wrong, you know, and that
right.
and that's another reason why WWE can't really kind of even, you know, lay groundwork for somebody because, whoops, you know, John can't, he's not going to be ready. So we got to have somebody else in line. So we don't even want to tease John, but at the same time, that's the hope is that we're going to have him.
And you know, if it's not Cena, you know, I know there's been talk of Braun Strowman. At one point, I thought it could be Braun Strowman. I don't think that anymore. I really don't.
I think
they're going down that path.
I think it's Bray Wyatt.
I don't know. I mean,
I'm not saying that
Bray and the Undertaker. This happened, you know, a year ago, and like I don't. Are people really clamoring for the rematch? I don't know.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Not Taker. I was thinking Bray Wyatt against Lesnar. I'm sorry. And quite honestly, it might even be Ambrose against Lesnar at this point. Yeah. I don't know who it would be. Maybe I was kind of thinking Owens against him, but I don't up against Taker.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
that's what I was thinking. I thought Kevin Owens is a guy who could slide into that spot. But if that's the case, then it's you know they're going about it in a strange way, having him put over Dolph Ziggler 2 weeks in a row. And unless, and I wrote about this on my blog, unless the idea is that Kevin Owens is getting so frustrated that he's been losing a couple matches, will he face Dolph at Fastlane and really not only beat him but destroy him? And from that point on, Kevin Owens is more dangerous than ever. And that kind of builds him up in a way to face The Undertaker. And look, streak is over. I wouldn't mind, and I think it would actually be the right thing, if you did do Kevin Owens and Undertaker at Mania, have Owens go over.
Yeah.
Why not?
Do you think this
Streak's over, so why not?
Yeah. Do you think this is Taker's last Mania?
I've felt that for like the past 5 years, you know, and having worked at WWE, there was always much consternation of, is he going to make it or is he not? You know, is he going to make it this year? And I, you know, playing it, you know, Michael Hayes was kind of the guy that always talked to him. And every once in a while, you know, you'd get closer and closer to Mania and, you know, yeah, I talked to Take today. He's not doing good. I don't think he's going to make it this year. I really don't. And we always go, okay, well, I guess he's not going to make it. And then, you know, we'd always hear, yeah, he's good. He's coming.
So. He's good. Yeah, that's the thing about Taker, man. He's gonna find a way to make it, you know. And the funny thing is too.
I'll tell you what though. I'm sorry to cut you off, but you know what was really legit was, they really didn't think. I think there was a lot of concern that after that match against Brock, where the streak ended, that he wasn't going to come back because he was in rough shape for a while.
Yes.
I mean, he was having double vision. I think at that point it wasn't just, you know, I talked to him. He might not come in. At that point, it was really like that may have been the last that we ever see of Mark. Like that could be it. Because he was in rough shape.
Well, let me throw out this scenario then. So the belief in that match was that midway through it, he suffered a concussion. He took a bad bump on the floor.
Yeah.
With what we know about concussions now, and we're still finding out a lot more, and the information is coming in fast and furious and led to, you know, Daniel Bryan hanging up his boots now. If that match happened now, and I know it's, we're talking about The Undertaker, we're talking about WrestleMania, but if that match happened now and that happened, do you think that match would be stopped?
Boy, that is a really good question. And geez, I don't know the answer. My gut feeling is no. I know the mentality is, especially with veterans, you know, and yeah, talking about a match like of that magnitude on that stage, I can't imagine that it would be stopped. I think they would forge ahead. And then it's just like the NFL or, you know, then it's the concussion protocol. You know, I think after the fact, then it would be, although it is different than the NFL. I shouldn't even make that comparison because you would be pulled out of the game in the middle. In the NFL, you would be pulled out and have to go through the protocol right at that point.
That's what I wonder if we're going to get to that stage, too, where maybe if there is a question about a guy that does the ringside physician, and I know it takes longer to actually do a real concussion test than just, you know, a minute or two, but do you at least pause a match, even on a stage like that, to get checked out to where, and then the physician says, hey, this guy's concussed, and it's done.
It's a really interesting question going forward with, you know, it being such a hot button issue. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know if we'll ever get to that point. I mean, I know the referee, you know, constantly is one of his jobs in the ring is to keep an eye on the competitors and check on them if, you know, if it looks like they've had their bell rung or whatever the case may be. And if a guy was really loopy and seemed out of it, and would the referee have to step in at that point and call for medical attention? I don't know. It would be very interesting to see if anything like that ever happened. I remember at WrestleMania 25 or 26 when it was John Cena and The Miz. 26? 27?
26, I think.
26. There was a spot in that match, I'm sure you probably remember it, when Miz banged his head on the concrete floor really, really hard.
27.
And, man.
Maybe 27.
Okay, 27. You remember that spot when Miz banged his head?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Miz says he doesn't remember the rest of the match.
No. I mean, that to me would be one of those scenarios where you just discussed would be like, do you step in at that point? You know, it's the main event of WrestleMania. You got to get to the finish, but what do you do? I mean, after his head hit the, I couldn't believe the guy got up and finished the match.
I know. Well, how about when Taker flew over the ropes and didn't get caught at Mania 25?
I literally, I'm not even saying this to be facetious or fun. I literally thought that he could have been killed. Like, I thought that he could have been paralyzed or worse.
Yeah.
The way he landed on the top of his head, it just amazes me that he walked away from that.
I was in the crowd. I mean, I was a member of the media, but I also had a seat in the crowd, and I went and sat out there for that match with some friends, and I remember seeing that, and I stood up, and I thought I was going to puke, man, just watching that.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, my, he ain't moving, you know? And, I mean, it was the same kind of feeling I had when Foley took the bump off the cage, you know, where I'm just sitting there watching with a friend, and you see this, and I jumped up and I almost became ill because you're thinking this guy's dead. He is dead. You know, if he's not dead, he is seriously injured. I mean, what we just saw, it was crazy. Cause I mean,
I think we all felt that way with Lesnar too, WrestleMania 19. I mean, literally thought the guy broke his neck and was going to be paralyzed.
Yeah.
Or worse. It was crazy.
As much as difficult as the decision could be to stop a match, I am curious to see what the protocol is going to be about that going forward. And I know some of that might not even be concussion, but it's still neck related. And when you're talking about things like that, you know, as important as the show is, I mean, there are much more important things that are on the line here. And, you know, I know it wasn't a WrestleMania and this was a Raw, but we remember the time where, you know, Daniel Bryan is facing Randy Orton and he's going to win that match. And Daniel gets a stinger and his arm is hanging and Triple H put an end to that match. And Daniel screamed at him backstage about it, you know, and just said, don't do that to me. But they were looking out for his best interest. Like I said, much smaller scale because while it was live television, while it was on Raw, you know, it's different than a WrestleMania.
Yeah. And Daniel was really, I mean, livid doesn't even begin to describe it when that match was stopped. And again, he's coming from the mentality of, look at what Daniel Bryan, look at the matches that he had in Ring of Honor and other places. You know, he had a match where he had suffered detached retina and continued the match. He had a match where he separated his shoulder early in they were going to a 60-minute Broadway, and I think the separated shoulder happened early, and he finished the match. So he took it as, you know, I don't know if you want to say a source of pride or it was just what had been ingrained in him as a professional, is that you don't stop. As long as you have a breath in your body, you continue. And I think that was his argument, was I've never had a match stopped in my life. I've wrestled with a detached retina. You know, this isn't even the worst injury I've had. how dare you stop my match? And, you know, it's that's just how passionate he really is about what he does, and really a testament to his toughness. But sometimes, you know, better to have more brains than guts, I guess, right?
Oh, yeah. So let me bring up one last thing. So we all know about Titus O'Neil being suspended for after the Daniel Bryan celebration on Monday. And this is the portion that was on the WWE Network. It wasn't even on Raw, but Daniel goes to the back. Vince is starting to go to the back. And Titus O'Neil grabs Vince's arm for whatever reason and kind of spins him around. I don't know exactly why he did it. When I saw it, I couldn't tell if Vince was mad or kind of laughing at him or, you know, kind of pushed him away. And I wasn't sure if it was just a couple bros being bros or what was going on. And then we find out, you know, on Tuesday that Vince was mad and he suspended Titus. Originally it was for 90 days, but now it's 60 days. Have you ever seen a situation this bizarre where it looks like something that maybe it's something a guy shouldn't have done, but it wasn't some outlandish, egregious act, but yet is being hammered for it?
I thought it was incredibly bizarre. And I was out and about yesterday. I was doing a lot of different things, so I really wasn't, you know, in front of my computer for like, you know, you got, everybody has their cell phone with them. So, you know, check the headlines, what's going on. And I see this all over Facebook and Twitter. And the first thing I thought it was one of those clickbait fake headlines.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, this can't be, oh, come on. He got suspended for hugging. No, this isn't real. And then once it became apparent that, okay, something happened and he is suspended, I thought for sure there had to be more to the story. Like, that can't be it. It can't just be that one little moment where he grabbed his arm. But, you know, I did a little digging, and at least from my understanding is that there isn't anything more to the story. There wasn't anything that happened before that or after that. That it really was one of those spur-of-the-moment things that happened, and Vince just got incredibly angry that Titus put his hands on him. And that even though there was clearly no malice and Titus wasn't trying to injure him in any way, I think Titus yanked on Vince a little bit harder than he should have. And it happened in front of people and Vince kind of lost his balance. I think there was some embarrassment there maybe. And Vince was livid, you know, to use that word again, he was really, really hot about it. And, you know, from what I was told, 60 days or 90 days, he almost got off easy because it could have been even worse. So
right. And you have Batista going on Twitter and saying you should have asked for your release because he's tight with Titus. And he thought it was an overreach, too. And I understand that Vince could have been embarrassed. You know, I mean, a guy of his stature and, you know, his position. I get that. But I just thought that the whole suspension was just an overreach, that if you want to scold the guy, you want to yell at him, and you want to say you're not going to be on SmackDown, I'll see you in a week or whatever, fine, you know. But to suspend a guy for 90 days and now 60 days in, he has to miss WrestleMania, I think that's crazy.
I thought it was an overreaction as well, especially, and I wrote about this, I think you have to look at, you have to take everything on a case-by-case basis, and you have to look at the individuals involved. Let's look at Titus O'Neil. Let's look at his record as an employee. Has he ever had any behavioral problems? Has he ever been in trouble? To my knowledge, the answer is no. He's clearly a man of character by all the charity work that he does. And I know he gets some publicity for that. Titus does a lot of stuff, you know, I know this, that even goes under the radar as far as charities and such. So, and if you've ever been around him, Titus is a good guy and has a good heart. So I think you have to take that into consideration when you're going to levy, if you really feel it was unprofessional conduct and you need to levy out some kind of disciplinary action, that's fine. But let's make the punishment fit the crime. And let's consider, you know, like in any situation, you look at priors, right? To use the police term, first offense. And, you know, for a guy who's never been in any kind of trouble and has only represented the company in the best way imaginable and is a huge role model, yeah, scold him, fine him, whatever you need to do. Send him home for a couple weeks without pay. If that's what you feel like you need to do to send a message that kind of conduct was inappropriate and won't be tolerated, that's fine. But suspending the guy for 60 to 90 days for that, I don't see it. I mean, you know, you get suspended 60 days when you have your second strike of the wellness policy.
Yeah.
Are we saying that this is equal to that? Like, I think it was, you know, I think Vince overreacted and blew off the handle, and I think it doesn't reflect well on him, and I don't think it reflects well on the company that a guy like Titus, you know, literally dad of the year, you know, and a guy who does so much good work in the community, for him to be made an example of in this way, I think it just looks bad on Vince and it looks bad on WWE. Now,
absolutely.
I will say this, having worked with Titus for a few years, Titus, as good of a guy as he is, he could be a little overzealous at times. As far as, you know, everybody wants to talk to the boss at TV. Everybody has an idea they want to pitch Vince. And like and Titus was one of those guys who always couldn't wait to tell Vince about a new idea or a new storyline. And in some ways, that's great because the guy's passionate and he cares and he's looking to further his career. But it can also be a little bit of, you know, there's a million things going on at TV today. You know, Titus, you're not high on my list today, you know. And I know he could sometimes rub people the wrong way in that sense, you know, Titus, just relax a little bit kind of thing. And I also think this might have been a case of Titus thinking maybe he and Vince had a little closer of a relationship than maybe they do, and he felt like he could horse around with him, roughhouse that way. You know, like, I mean, maybe that's something that John Cena could have gotten away with, but I don't know that it's something that Titus O'Neil could get away with. And with that being said, I can also tell you that Vince is a huge supporter, has been, of Titus.
Right.
That I know that Vince was constantly, you know, even there were some horrible ideas that Titus had. Like that thing when he and Darren Young, I don't even remember what they called themselves, but they were supposed to be like old men, like their uncles or something. Do you remember that whole thing?
Oh, yeah. Whatever that was. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Literally every single person that I know in the company thought that was god awful. You know who thought it was hilarious? Vince McMahon.
Oh, I'm sure.
And Vince put that on TV. He put that on TV. I remember they did a segment with John Cena, of all people, the top guy in the company, and it was just embarrassingly bad. And then Vince was like, "Okay, well, yeah, I guess you guys are right. That's pretty bad." But he was always trying to find something for Titus, a spot for Titus. I think he does admire him. You know, he's a big, huge guy. Clearly, Vince likes guys with size. He's an athlete. Good human being, which, believe it, that does mean something to Vince. He's not going to embarrass the company in any way out in the community. All those things Vince admires and I think wanted to find a better spot for Titus. And the wheels were in motion. He was getting a little bit of a push on TV. So I don't think, you know, I saw ridiculous things like stories calling Vince a racist and, you know, things like that. Honestly, I don't think anything could be further from the truth. I think the only discrimination in this sense is where you are on the card. Okay, that's what the unfair part. If a Caucasian wrestler who's in the mid card, same spot as Titus, did this, I think the punishment would have been exactly the same.
I agree.
Now, if a top guy grabbed Vince like that, a guy who makes him money, no, they wouldn't have been suspended for any days. You know, they might have gotten their ass chewed out backstage. They may have been fined, but probably not even that. So that's the only discriminatory thing I see is, no, punishment is not levied out equally based on where you are in the card. But that's, you know, that's life. I mean, that's probably in any walk of life.
Yeah, and I agree. I don't think it was a race thing. And if this was something that had happened backstage, then yes, but it was because it was out in front of everybody. You know, the platform was at. And by the way, it wasn't just Titus's uncle. We're talking about his alter ego, Rufus Pancake Patterson.
Pancake Patterson, yes, that was it.
Pancake Patterson.
That's some of the worst stuff that has ever made it, in my opinion, ever made it on the WWE TV.
Were you there for that?
Awful. I was there for that. And then, again, Titus, you know, Vince finds Titus very entertaining, and he can be.
He can be.
But
yeah.
Sometimes Titus's ideas are, you know, Pancake Patterson, right? And Vince has the strangest sense of humor of any human being I've ever met. And, you know, there's stuff that he thinks funny, that's funny, that no one else in the world would find funny, and vice versa. Stuff that is funny that Vince, oh, I don't get it. So, hey, whatever reason, he loved Pancake Patterson, and he put him out there with John Cena.
So let me put you on the spot here, because now you are the person behind the ultra-popular The Eck Factor blog, which everybody can find at KevinEckWrestling.sportsblog.com. Will you be...
That only took you an hour to plug the website. That's good.
Yep. Will you be picking up the old tradition to where I will be helping you out with a power supply and internet and joining me at WrestleMania this year?
Sad to say that no. That's not in the cards. No, that's not going to happen.
Devastating, because I was looking forward to
you. I'm going to have my laptop plugged in as I sit on my couch and watch.
Can you lose your Wi-Fi in an important time just for old time's sake? Actually, it never happened in an important time. It happened right at the beginning. It was like right at the beginning of the show.
My track record, with my track record, it wouldn't surprise me. You know what has happened to me? is my network during pay-per-views. I'll sit down and I'm all ready to watch it. You know, I take my notes on the shows like a month or two ago. And then the thing froze. I don't know if it's ever happened to you, but
it has. And the funny thing is, so for the longest time, I was watching through my PlayStation, and then I got a Roku, and it's been working. But lately, it hasn't been working as well. And the interface on the Roku is different. And so sometimes if that happens, I have to switch, and I just open up my laptop, and it works. But for some reason on my Roku, sometimes it has a little bit of a problem. I don't like the interface and how you search and the way that it's all laid out on the on a Roku compared to how it is like on your computer. And I know it has to be a little bit different, but it's still kind of funky to find some stuff sometimes. Like the other day, I was going to watch some of WrestleMania 30. Like I was going to watch the end. And the only thing that I could find when searching on my Roku for that show was the 1 hour of WrestleMania that they had said the 1 hour special, and it didn't even include Daniel Bryan winning the championship. It had the Taker match where he lost to Lesnar, and it had John Cena against Bray Wyatt.
Well, that's definitely a flaw in the system.
Yeah. Tell me about it. I mean, but I love the annual tradition of you sitting down next to me, and as the show is beginning, you know, you'd be frantically going, how come the damn Wi-Fi is not working for me? And I'd just be sitting there just kind of chuckling, going, it's working for me. I can't say anything, you know. And then, you know, being the upstanding person I am, you know, helping you out, you know, in any way I could, including one time actually giving you my laptop.
You did do that.
And for that, I think I have earned an Ektourage t-shirt.
How about half price?
Half price, I'll take it. Well, I always enjoy you coming on here, and just a quick reminder for everybody, of course, check out the X-Factor blog, and then you can follow Kevin on Twitter. Is it still KevinEck_WWE, right?
It still is.
We need to do something about that.
Nah, it helps me attract followers.
Okay, so maybe we won't do anything about that. We'll keep it the way it is. But
no, I don't do anything about that. Yeah.
For everybody
not
that
breaking any law.
Okay, I know you're not. But for everybody that wants to see Kevin up front and personal, you can Saturday night, the MCW Arena in Joppa, Maryland, at the Extreme Anniversary 2016 for Maryland Championship Wrestling, where his boys, the Maryland Championship Wrestling Tag Team Champions, Ektourage, will be putting the championships on the line against the Appalachian Outlaws. Does that sound pretty good? Is that pretty good?
That's good. And also on that same card, the Guns for Hire, my other tag team, will take on the Hellcats.
Like it?
So I got double duties. I got double duty that
night. Wow, you're going to be able to hold up?
2 matches, 2 victories. Guarantee it. You know why? Because I've seen the script, and it always goes according to the way I plan it.
I wish I was up there. I'd love to go to one of those shows.
I guarantee it says right on the script, Ektourage over, Guns for Hire over.
Is that because you take the script and you scribble it out and you put that over it? Or Sharpie?
That's the way it's going to play out.
Or do you have the red pen?
Don't need one. Nope. No rewrites. No, one draft.
If you say so.
It's going to go down that way.
If you say so. Well, enjoy the show this weekend, and thanks again for coming on the podcast, and we'll do it again.
All right, sounds good.
The talking is over.
Thanks for downloading Between the Ropes.
Now, you guys are awesome. Thank you.
For more, go to BetweenTheRopes.com and subscribe to Between the Ropes on iTunes.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.